Great, and thank you everybody for coming back. I don't know how many of you have ever given one of these lecture series, but you face you encounter the incredible shrinking audience sometimes when you give these, and by the end, the audience has shrunk down to nothing. So it's always a good feeling when people come back. So last time I talked in general terms about topological field theories, and I want to talk about, in the next two lectures, I want to talk about some specific examples. In all the examples I know, the field theories themselves are constructed in some way out of generators and relations, and it winds up being you specify a lot of data and you have to check a lot of conditions. And one of the things I'm most interested in are trying to find direct constructions of these. So I want to talk about two methods I know of for making directly constructing these topological field theories. Okay, so today I'm a little lucky that Barang gave his talk this morning, because now I know everyone knows about string topology. But I'll just remind you, because I know it's been a long day and you might not remember. So this is So first let me talk about an example of a topological field theory. So I'm going to... So I want to consider a very special kind. I want to consider something that associates to each one manifold, let's say the circle, will go to something V, which you might think of as a vector space. You might wish to think of it as a chain complex. You might wish to think of it as a spectrum in the sense of algebraic topology. But just for today, I'll think of these. We'll just consider these very algebraic kinds of examples. And since it's a field theory, this is supposed to take disjoint unions, go to tensor products, and I'm supposed to think of the diffeomorphism group perhaps acting on these. And then if I have a Riemann surface with boundary, so I'll have the boundary decomposed into incoming and outgoing pieces, I get a map from the incoming tensor product to the outgoing. Now, there's a lot of variations on this kind of structure, and I want to consider I have to say about kind of a dense plan for this talk, so I'm not going to ruminate very much on what this structure means. I'm more interested in giving you a mechanism for producing examples of it. But I want this map to depend continuously on this Riemann surface. So I really would like to say we actually get a map from the moduli space. Of surfaces into the space of maps from the incoming thing to the outgoing. So not only, it's not just that for every Riemann surface I get a map. If my Riemann surface moves a little in a family, the map moves a little bit, and they compose when I glue. So I won't be, I might be a little more specific about this a little later. So there's one very nice theorem I want to mention right at the beginning about this. One very nice important thing I want to mention at the beginning is what I'm going to talk about today is joint work with Jacob Lurie. And it's also involved a lot of conversations with Veronique Godin and Ben Wieland. People have had a lot. Okay, so let me try to stay on topic here. So this is a lot of structure, and let me just tell you what there's a very nice result due to Getzler. which tells you what this structure amounts to if I just restrict to genus zero surfaces. So just restricting to genus zero surfaces, so a TCFT, a topological field theory, on genus zero surfaces is the same thing as what's called a Batalovan-Vilkovisky algebra. So let me just spell out a little bit about what that is. There's a lot of structure, but I'm just going to tell you kind of the main features. One is that this surface, the pair of tans, gives you a map from V tensor V into V, which is a kind of a multiplication that makes V into an algebra. There's a lot of other structure. As I said, I'm just going to focus on two pieces of it. There's this cylinder with two parameterized boundaries, and these cylinders. There's a whole moduli space of those. The moduli space of cylinders. It at least has the homotopy type of the circle. You should have in mind the theorem in complex analysis that tells you that. Let's just imagine. Here's a circle's worth. I can take this circle and parameterize it here, and I can start this circle at any other point, and that gives me a whole circle's worth of cylinders. So that moduli space corresponds to the circle, and that gives me a map from S1 cross V into V. Or if I was supposed to thinking of linearizing, if this is some linear object, I should think of this as linear. So more properly, I should think of this as a map from the homology of S1 tensor V into V. And the generator in dimension 0 is the identity map, and the generator in dimension 1 gives me a map delta from V shifted by 1 into V. And this delta has a nice algebraic relationship with the product, which I won't make explicit, just in the interest of time. Anyway, this is a beautiful theorem of Ezra's. Okay, now, so you should think of this topological field theory in this dimension as a snazzy generalization of Batalovan-Vilkovisky algebra. You have a product and a lot of extra structure. So, gosh, this may be going almost 10 years ago. Sullivan, Moira Chaz and Dennis Sullivan introduced an unexpected structure, unexpected to topologists, on the homology groups of the loop space of a manifold. So they introduced a multiplication from the homology of the free loop space on a manifold into the homology of the free loop space, shifting degrees, I think, by plus or minus the dimension. I'm going to get the sign wrong if I try to work it out in my head. Let's see. I'm not going to worry about the sign. Parang was describing this multiplication in his talk. There's also a circle action on the loop space. And so that gives me a map from if I take S1, H1 of the circle, I get an operator delta, and together these make the homology of the free loop space into a Batalovan-Vilkovisky algebra. So this extra structure that appeared on loop spaces of manifolds it led to a lot of shift in point of view about thinking about manifolds, and it all goes under the rubric of string topology. And many people have made a lot of contributions to string topology. Ralph Cohen is one of the leaders in that area, and Chaz and Sullivan. So this raised the question, I think this was actually in Sullivan's mind at the beginning, of is there really a whole topological field theory? Is the homology of the free loop space the value on the circle of an entire topological field theory? And so there's a recent result of Véronique Godin, so it's a construction which says that is the case. So the homology of LM is the value at the circle of a topological field theory. In other words, think of this delta as an operation on V coming from the moduli space of cylinders, you get operations coming from the moduli space of every Riemann surface. So this is a recent theorem of Véronique Godin that kind of gives you a pretty nice picture here. So I'm not here to complain about anybody's theorem, but if I sit here and just praise everyone's theorem as the final word on the subject, it's not going to leave me anything to say. So let me put this positively. No, I like this theorem of Véronique's a lot. There are a lot of questions that kind of remain open. I mean, one is, so this construction of this field theory has a lot to do with the smoothness of the manifold. And you heard in Barang's talk this morning that you know, one of the important things that goes into understanding this product is that the diagonal map of M into itself has a normal bundle. And this question came up of, are you able to see any of the real smooth invariants of the manifold? Could you get the Pontryagin classes out of the string topology? So what I want to do today is give you a different construction of this topological field theory that only requires M to be a Poincaré duality space. And so that's sort of good news and bad news. I think the good news is it gives us a pretty good understanding of why we have a field theory like this. The bad news is it tells you that at least as defined like this, this string topology isn't going to see much of the smooth structure of M. In fact, it's defined just in terms of M as a Poincaré duality space, so homotopy equivalent manifolds will have isomorphic, give you equivalent theories. I'm told that there is a kind of compactification of this idea that is expected to remember more of the smooth structure, but just for this amount of structure, it's topologically, in fact, homotopy invariant. Okay, as I said, so as I advertised, the thing I'm most interested in is to give intrinsic constructions of these, and I want to talk about one today. So there's a very beautiful construction that's due to Kevin Costello, and Kevin wrote this beautiful paper about these kind of field theories, and I'm going to summarize it for you a little bit. And he gave a very beautiful way of producing examples of these topological field theories. So let me tell you his formulation. So Kevin talks about, he defines something he calls open-closed topological conformal field theories. Now, I've played a little bit here with the terminology. Strictly speaking, what I've mentioned for you should be called a topological conformal field theory. And the conformal refers to the fact that I'm considering the moduli spaces of these surfaces. But I'm going to tend to drop this word from just to keep, just for the purposes of this talk, I won't be talking about any other kind of theory. So Kevin talks about open-closed topological field theories. What are they? Well, these are theories where what he almost does is allows us to have zero manifolds in here. But the zero manifolds aren't occurring just by themselves. And so in Kevin's open-closed theory, I allow my basic objects are one-dimensional manifolds, but I'm allowed to have two kinds. I'm allowed to have circles, and I'm allowed to have one manifolds with boundary. So I have two basic objects. This will go to some object V, and this will get associated to this interval, this one manifold. I'll have some object A. And again, disjoint unions will go to tensor products. Now, what plays the role of these Riemann surfaces? Well, it's a little bit of a mouthful to spell it all out, but I have a Riemann surface whose boundary is decomposed into different kinds of pieces. So there might be some genus in here. There might be just a disk cut out in the middle of the Riemann surface. And at the other side, I might have something like this. Okay, so in this Riemann surface, I have three kinds of boundary components. I have the closed boundary components. I have these, which are called open. And I have these parts, which are called constrained. And I could have an entire boundary component that's constrained. So the open and the closed parts are parametrized, and the constrained parts are unparametrized. And these are broken into incoming and outgoing. So let me refer to this as the incoming closed, and these will be the incoming open, and this will be outgoing closed, and these will be outgoing open. And what this Riemann surface gives me is a map from a tensor product of copies of A, tensored over the incoming open things, a big tensor product of copies of V, to the tensor product of copies of A indexed by the outgoing open components and the outgoing closed ones. I get a copy of V. Okay, so these are called open-closed theories. And again, I'm not going to write it out on the board, but I can glue these together along the closed pieces. I can glue open pieces together. And when I glue surfaces together, the maps compose. And as this surface moves through its modulus, this map is supposed to vary continuously or somehow homologically in a way that depends on the modulus. That doesn't count as a boundary. That's un.
You can always forget boundary components in these processes. You have a map like this, but you can always just subtract one by sort of pretending that that's it.
If it was parameterized, you're not allowed to forget the parameterization. But if you're gonna, these boundary components are parameterized, in particular oriented. And so I'm just gonna answer more than your question, I guess. So if the orientation might be compatible or incompatible with the orientation of the Riemann surface. So here are the orientations in this direction, and the Riemann surface, say, has this orientation, these are opposite, and these become incoming, and these become outgoing. So whenever I draw a picture, yeah, Ezra? Well, so whenever I draw a picture like this, the parameterized things get either stuck incoming or outgoing. I know this wasn't what you asked, but I wanted. Now, I could have, yeah. If I'd had a little piece of. Okay. Right. Ezra's telling us we could have had we could have had that. And they don't have to be connected. And you know, there's enough variations on this for everybody in the room to correct the speaker. If I take this, what I like to think of as a pair of chaps instead of a pair of pants, and my friend has a pair, and we put our feet together, and I glue, then I'm going to create a completely unparameterized boundary component. And so those are forced into the game, but I don't create them just by saying, I used to have a parameterization of this, and I can't remember where I put it. Okay. I don't know if I got your question, but it's important to remember that you wind up creating these sort of little windows, but there's no way to decide that they're incoming or outgoing. I goofed this one up. This would have to have this orientation to be on the outgoing part. Okay, all right. So this is an open-close theory. These were first considered by Greg Moore and Graham Siegel in a more rigidified version, and then Kevin started studying this more elaborate version. Now, okay, let me formulate this in a slightly different way. I'm going to define this category I'll call OC, not because of California, but because of it stands for open-closed. So this will be the category where the objects are one manifold, possibly with boundary. And the morphisms are Riemann surfaces, as I've described. So the morphisms are really moduli spaces of Riemann surfaces. And the composition law is as I alluded to. And then an open-closed theory is a tensor functor from OC to some other category, which I'll call D, which might be vector spaces or chain complexes or something. Something like that. Okay, now. Here's Kevin's sort of really beautiful idea. This beautiful idea is let's restrict to the subcategory that just has open things, and then I also have the subcategory that just has closed ones. So this is the full sub. These are full embeddings. I'll call this map J, and this one I. And this is the full subcategory just consisting of open strings or one manifolds. In other words, ones with boundary, and these are just the closed ones. So to give a tensor functor out of this C is to give what I originally called a topological field theory. This C is generated by this one object, and this O is generated by this one object. Okay. Now, there's a couple of beautiful theorems of Kevin. So the first one is that a tensor functor from O to some category is the same thing as an A infinity Frobenius algebra in G. I'm going to say something about that in say something more precise about that in a minute. But let's just say that this is an example of a kind of an algebraic structure that you could produce. So this is just an algebra with a little extra data. That gives you a tensor functor from this to some category D. So I should give this a name, and let's see, this is just determined by its value on this interval, and I called the value on that interval A, so let's call this functor A. Now, Kevin's beautiful idea was to consider the derived left con extension of A, or if you think of these as like groups, and I have a representation of the group, this is the left con extension is the construction that would give you the induced module. So the notation for that would be, I'm taking the left derived functor of I and applying it to A. All right, so there's a universal way of starting with a functor here, making a functor from this bigger category, and it's usually called the con extension. Okay, so Kevin's second theorem is that has two parts. So the second theorem, so the first assertion is that Li star A is a tensor functor. That's not something automatic, and in fact, it makes use of a property of these moduli spaces of surfaces. So it isn't true that if I start with a tensor functor and just induce, I'll get a tensor functor. So that's something that's lucky in this case. Okay, therefore, I could start with an A infinity Frobenius algebra, whatever that means, and I can just produce an open closed theory, and then I could restrict it and get a topological field theory of the kind that I described. So his second theorem tells us what that is. It tells us, so this Li star A has two parts. It has an algebra. It has an A and a V. Remember, I said these open-closed things have an A, which is attached to the interval, and a V, which is attached to the circle. The A, in this case, is the old A. So you didn't change what you started with. And the V is the Hochschild homology, or the Hochschild chains on A. So I'm actually going to, I really want to be thinking about chain complexes and not their homology groups. So let me just use the following notation, CH, for Hochschild chains. Okay. All right, so you get a formula. Now you get a mechanism for producing intrinsically topological field theories. So you get a following method. Start with an A infinity Frobenius algebra, and then it's the Hochschild chains on A gives you a topological field theory. Okay. So this is a great method, assuming you can construct A infinity Frobenius algebras. So if you want to pretend you can construct them, I better tell you what they are. Now, so an A infinity Frobenius algebra well, what is it? It's an A infinity algebra that's Frobenius. So it's an A infinity algebra A together with a trace map for from A to the ground ring. Now, I'm also going to wind up my, well, or I'm going to, if you're taking notes, leave a little room to decorate this later. So that's just a map. K is the ground ring. I'm supposing I'm doing algebras over some ring. It might be the ring of integers, or it might be a field, or it might be something. Anyway, this is the ground ring. And what's the Frobenius condition? It's that the map A tensor A into A going into K, this gives me a bilinear form on A, and the condition is that this is a non-degenerate symmetric, a non-degenerate. And I think symmetric. Okay, but the main condition is going to be that the map from A to A dual is an isomorphism. So this is the apparatus that needs to fit into Kevin's machine in order to produce a topological field theory. Let's see. The kind of motivating example I want to have in mind is when this is the algebra of cochains on a manifold. And so this will correspond to Poincaré duality. But the map, the trace map changes degrees. It goes up into the dimension of the manifold. I'm going to indicate that by putting a negative d here, just so I can keep the indices straight. So in my brain, differentials always go down. And if you're looking at cochains, then you got to write them upside down. And anyway, for me, differentials will always lower degree. It's just that comes from growing up with homotopy theory. Anyway, so I'm going to write this like this. So this means K stuck in negative degree, and the motivating example you'd like is to take the cochains on a manifold. Okay, so this, and Kevin, in his paper on this, Kevin offers the following idea for producing string topology operations. He outlines a program. So we start with a smooth manifold M, and we take the cochains on M. And we take the trace map, which will go to our ground field shifted by D. M is a D-dimensional manifold. This is A infinity. In fact, it's E infinity. And the Frobenius condition corresponds to Poincaré duality. Okay, so I get an A infinity Frobenius algebra. And therefore, it's Hochschild. Now dig this one. The Hochschild cochains on M, this is the state space of a topological field theory. Okay, now there's a theorem. We can combine this with the theorem of Eilenberg and Moore. And atoms, that Hochschild, that this is isomorphic to the cochains on the free loop space of M. And that makes the cochains on the free loop space into a topological field theory. Well, that's pretty close to the Sullivan picture. That was on the chains. This is just the linear dual, and I haven't said it, but if you have one of these theories, the dual vector space is also one of those. So this was good enough to get that kind of structure on the cochains. Now, there's two things that are wrong with this. This doesn't exactly work. And there's two kind of little things that are wrong with it. One is that the Eilenberg-Moore spectral sequence doesn't always converge, and it has a problem when M has a fundamental group. So let me make a list of these troubles somewhere. So problems. So the first thing is that Eilenberg Moore require that that M be simply connected, or at least M. Bill Dwyer later improved this. What you really at least need is that M is a nilpotent space. Okay, so that's one thing. The other problem is sort of maybe a little more serious, and this is an issue that was raised by Dennis Sullivan, and that is we haven't really produced what Kevin calls an A-infinity Frobenius algebra. And Kevin himself remarks this in his paper. There's something a little bit wrong, a little bit off with this formulation. See, on this side of the board, I've asked for an infinity type of condition on A. I've asked for a multiplication that satisfies identities up to infinite coherence. On this side of the board, I've asked for I've made a rigid condition. I've asked this map be an isomorphism, and I've asked that something be symmetric on the nose. So this is a mix. This is not a good thing to do. This is a mix of sort of an really soft tree-hugging infinity stuff with really right-wing rigid identity, and we don't want to do that. I guess if I continue with that, then I'm pushing us all into the tree hugger land. Anyway, that's where we're going. What's that?
We're in Canada
anyway. We are. That's true. That's true. Okay. Wait, are you saying something about Canadians? You know, this is going to be on the internet forever. So. It's good. There's a lot of trees. Okay. That's good. That's good. What's that? You cut them down, yeah. So when people uncover this archive in the year 3096, they'll know that there were once trees underneath the ocean of Canada. Okay. Okay, so these are two. Oh, so the other objection is that, so the cochains on a manifold, right? That's great. That's A infinity. It's E infinity. This doesn't happen on the nose, and so there's a problem. There's a conceptual problem here. How do we fix this definition so it fits into Kevin's machine? So let me just say that Costello's that C star M is not or does not. It's not quite an A infinity Frobenius algebra. Well, actually, my aim today is to give a definition of A infinity Frobenius algebra to kind of correct that right-hand side so that the cochains on the manifold does fit into this definition. So I don't really want to have this up on the record of saying it's not quite an A infinity Frobenius algebra. Maybe I should just say it doesn't quite meet this definition of A infinity Frobenius algebra.
Do you mean because the form is non-degenerate, or do you have something else in mind?
That map is only a quasi-isomorphism. It's not an isomorphism. Okay. That's the problem, yeah. Right. I know it doesn't seem like very much of a problem, but I want to... and it has a sort of pretty nice answer, but I want to talk about it. Okay, now, I think I'm going to get all this out. So the first thing I want to tell you about has to do with objection one. And there's a very beautiful paper by Dmitri Weintraub. This paper, I don't know where you can even find it, but it came out, it's on the archive now? Okay. So he considered the case M is a Riemann surface. sigma. And he studied a model for the loop space of sigma. So the base loop space of sigma is a, well, that sigma is a k pi 1. So the base loop space has the homotopy type of a group. So let's let pi be pi 1 of sigma, and we'll just consider the group ring of pi, which I'm thinking of as a model for the base loop space on sigma. Ooh, that's really bad notation, isn't it? Let me try to decorate that sigma. Okay. All right, so this z pi, that's just a model for the base loop space on sigma. And he showed that, let me just get all this straight. Oh, I'm sorry. So that's actually a model for the chain on the base loop space of sigma. And so here, you know, so let me just talk about something in general. You know that the Hochschild chains on the base loop space of a manifold, that's always a model for the free loop space on a manifold. This is always true. There's no conditions. So this is the Rothenberg-Steenrod spectral sequence. It has no convergence issues, the Rothenberg-Steenrod spectral sequence. So you get a nice model for the chains on the loop space like this. And he produced a so Mitka, that's his nickname, Mitka produced a Batalovan-Vilkovisky structure on the chains on the loop space of sigma. And here's sort of how the argument went. You know that the Hochschild homology of the group ring of pi, that's the chains on this. This is the homology of the loop space on M. And this gives me the delta operator from the loop rotation. That's something you can define in terms of the Hochschild bar construction. It's the con B operator. Now, if you look at the chains on the universal cover of sigma, you'll find that this group ring has just a length 2 free resolution of Z. It's a Poincaré duality group that corresponds to the Poincaré duality in sigma. And in this case, it tells you that the Hochschild homology is the Hochschild cohomology of Z pi. And that gets a ring structure. So this operator, this delta operator and this ring structure give me a BV structure. And that tells me, and that corresponds to some way of defining, that's part of sort of the apparatus of string topology operations on the homology of loop space, on the loop space of this sigma. I guess I should have called this sigma in this case. All right, so this is pretty inspiring, and there's kind of a pretty clear way to generalize this to any manifold. I think, though, in the interest of time, I'm not going to talk about generalizing this. There's a bunch of things remarkable about this paper. One is, so he wrote this paper last summer at the end of his junior year of high school. This won the Siemens Science Prize this year, and I learned about the paper because I was a judge for that competition. It was kind of amazing. I mean, all these kids are brilliant. It's just amazing to do something like, you know, you see these incredible science projects, but to be walking through and all of a sudden see one on string topology was pretty amazing. Anyway, this is a beautiful piece of work. He gives explicit formulas for the Batalovan-Vilkovisky structure in terms of the combinatorics of the group. It's a wonderful piece of work. So I'm not going to say. Was there a question?
Did you get to
see any
of the other projects?
I did, yeah. Why?
Well, I would have thought you would stop there.
Oh, you know, the thing is, they're all just as amazing. If you want to like feel good about the future, go to one of those those things. They were all amazing kids, but this one was really, I mean, yeah. Anyway, okay. Okay, so this gives you another approach, and I guess, just as I said, in the interest of time, I'm not going to tell you the generalization of this, but this gets you around objection one. There's a way of reorganizing this theory. There's a kind of a Morita equivalent point of view where you use the Rothenberg-Steenrod spectral sequence instead of the Eilenberg-Moore spectral sequence, and it drops you away from this this trouble with the fundamental group. Okay, that's one problem. The other paper that came along that that shed a lot of light on this issue was a paper of Luke Manici that appeared sometime over the summer. So, oh darn, I was going to look up how to. Is it C-H-I or C-I? Does somebody know? C-H-I, okay. So there's a nice paper, a nice computation of Luke Manici. So this came out, this paper appeared last summer. And in the way I'm telling the story, we can think of what Luke did as this. He said, well, sometimes some spaces have the property that their cochain algebra is equivalent to the cohomology of the space as an algebra. And in that case, if I could replace the algebra by the cohomology, I'm out of this problem. All of a sudden, I have all the rigidity I want here, and I should be able to make a theory. So he applied that to the case of the two spheres. So it happens that the cochain algebra on the two sphere is equivalent as an A infinity algebra to the cohomology of the two sphere. which is just, of course, an exterior algebra on one generator of degree 2. And then he was able to calculate, we can think of it as, he calculated the BV structure. So then he computed on the Hochschild homology of the cohomology of the two sphere, and he got a BV structure, and he saw, so this is with you can do this with integer coefficients, he did it with Z mod 2 coefficients, and he found that it was not isomorphic to the one, the Chaz-Sullivan one. So this seemed kind of discouraging. It seemed like maybe Kevin's machine was just not going to be able to produce these the right kind of string topology. Maybe it was producing something completely different. So I want to tell you a little bit more about what goes on in this calculation. But let's just realize that this tells us that there are two Batalovan-Vilkovisky structures on the homology of the loop space of the two-sphere. So this has two BV structures. So this really seemed puzzling. I mean, here's Mitka Weintraub's point of view, which really seems like it's going to solve a lot of problems, and it seems like it's got to be giving you the right BV structure. And here suddenly Luke Manici reports on this calculation that gives us two different ones. Okay, let me go through, I'm not going to go through the details of the calculation, but I want to go through the algebraic maneuver to tell you about the missing piece of information. All right, so let me see. We really want our BV structure on the homology. And what we're getting information about was the cohomology. So let's see. I need to be a little more precise about how I'm going to get something about cohomology out of a machine like this. So let's see. The Hochschild homology of the chains of the cochains on a manifold. I'll do this for an arbitrary manifold, and we'll revisit the case of the two-sphere. That, by Eilenberg-Moore, tells us about the homology or the chains of the free, or the cohomology of the free loop space. We really want the dual of that. So the homology of the free loop space is the dual. So that's standing for vector space dual. Now, if you look at the Hochschild-Barr construction, the dual of the standard complex for calculating this is the standard complex for calculating what you might call the Hochschild cohomology of the cochains on M with values in the chains on M. So it's X'd over this algebra tensor. It tensor its opposite of this algebra into this module. Now, by Poincaré duality, the chains on M is isomorphic to the cochains on M. So I'm taking this piece and I'm using Poincaré duality. Get an isomorphism. Okay, so let's see. And here's how you can get the Batalha BV structure. The Hochschild homology, this always has a delta operator coming from the Kahn B operator. Hochschild cohomology always has a product. And using Poincaré duality, I can identify these, or I can identify one with the dual, and I can get a product and a delta operator to make this into a Batalha von Wilkowiski algebra. And that's the construction Lucmanici analyzed, replacing cochains with cohomology, which you can do in the case of the two-sphere. Okay, gosh, I used more time than I intended, but let me just say, let's look through this again. Let's look through this a little more carefully and try to think where we might have missed something. There's only one place, and it has to be in somehow how we used Poincaré duality. I mean, that's where, in fact, that's the key issue to this Frobenius structure. So look, Poincaré duality gave me an identification of the chains on M with the cochains on M. But I need to stick that into a Hochschild homology calculation. So we really need to identify chains on M with cochains on M as, let me write this as A tensor A op, as A bimodules. Oh, and in order for this to come out right, I want the map to go in that direction. So forgive this kind of cruddy notation. This is an algebra. Here's the algebra. Here's its dual. I need an isomorphism, not just as vector spaces. It has to be an isomorphism as bimodules over that algebra. Well, so that's an element in HOM over this A, let me call this A, A tensor A op of A into A dual, or if you want, an element in Hochschild 0 of A with coefficients in A dual. Okay, that hasn't got us anywhere. In the case of the cohomology of the two-sphere, it didn't matter. The Poincaré duality map, there's just not much algebra going on. It is a map of bimodules. But we have to remember that we're tree huggers. We're not right-wing militant tree burners. That means we weren't really supposed to look at something as rigid as this. We were really supposed to look at the infinity version of that. So what we really should have looked at is what we really should have looked at is not a homomorphism. We really should have looked at a derived homomorphism. Okay, what we really should have looked at is something in here. This is the derived version of writing down that map. Now, oh gosh, well let's see, I already told you what that works out to be, because that's that Hochschild cohomology group, which is the dual of the upper Hochschild cohomology group. So this thing corresponds to a map from the Hochschild chains. Let me use this other notation now. On the cochains on M back into the ground ring. And it'll have some degree, right? This Poincaré duality shifts degrees. So let me put that degree back in the notation here. So look, this already tells us we weren't supposed to just use a naive Poincaré duality isomorphism. It really had, even to feed it into this machine, it had to be a map of bimodules. We're not allowed to say map of bimodules. We're really allowed to, we have to work in some derived setting. We're forced, if we're really going to be infinity kind of people, to take it to be a map from this complex into here. Okay. Now, this involves several contributions. So this involves a map from the cohomology of M into K adjoined D, minus K shifted by D. It involves a map from the Hochschild homology of it involves a map from Hochschild H1 of M into K in degree 1 minus D, and it has components all the way going to Hochschild D of M into K 0, shifted by 0. So this was the original trace map, and there's room for a lot of extra data here. In case M is the 2-sphere, you can go do this calculation. When M is the 2-sphere, see, I think I'm just going to report on this. When M is the 2-sphere, I've got 1 and 2. This group is 0, and this next group gives me a Z2's worth of homomorphisms. So when M is the 2-sphere, if I would have defined my A infinity for B, well, that's the two different BV structures. There's two different A infinity, well, there's two different refinements of this A infinity Frobenius structure in the case of the 2-sphere. So that's the way out of the of Luc Menici's conundrum. And I want to tell you kind of the rest of the story. So let's go back, because we should have thought of this way back at the beginning, and I want to point out this isn't yet the definition of an A-infinity Frobenius algebra. How could we have thought of this way back at the beginning? Well, if we go back to the definition of this open-closed theory, where does the trace map come from? The trace map comes from this Riemann surface with this disk and this outgoing boundary. So this gives me a map from A to the ground ring, maybe shifted by D if I somehow incorporate these shifts of degree into the story. Now this actually factors through this, followed by this. So this is a map from A, and by Kevin's construction, this is the Hochschild homology of A, and then here's a trace map on the Hochschild homology. So look, we realize if just because of Kevin's machine, if we were going to produce this trace map in the first place, it was going to factor through Hochschild homology. That's what these pasting diagrams already tell me. So that's good. We should have known at the beginning we were going to get that kind of map. But that's not all, because remember, these surfaces are supposed to move through their moduli. So I'm going to glue these together. Let's imagine a little cylinder gluing these together. And there's a whole circle's worth of ways to do that. But by the time I'm done, I'm producing something that's going to be invariant. There's not a circle's worth of disks, so that circle action is acting trivially on the disk. So this map will actually have to factor through the cyclic homology of A. All right. In the interest of time, I think I'm going to have to cut to the chase. So this turns out to be all that you need. So let me see. So let me introduce some notation. I'm going to use this to stand for the cyclic chains. And then my definition will be an A infinity Frobenius algebra is an A infinity algebra A plus a map I'll allow some shift such that the following map such that A tensor A into A into CH C star A into K minus D. So that's not going to be symmetric, bilinear, whatever. It's just going to be non-degenerate as a pairing on chain complexes, such that this gives a quasi-isomorphism A to A dual. Okay. So I get a map from A to A dual, and now that's an infinity kind of thing. It's just supposed to be a quasi-isomorphism. I'm going to go a couple minutes over because I need to clarify some points of this, but let me just tell you the main theorem is that so the main theorem is, you know, let me write this like this, T-H-E-O-R-E, and I'm not going to finish spelling the word theorem because we haven't actually written down the proof of this, and so it's more a theory instead of a theorem. And it's due to, oh, this is good, it's due to myself and Jacob Lurie, and it's the following, that this definition of A infinity Frobenius algebra, so let me just say an A infinity Frobenius algebra can be fed into Costello's machine to make an open-closed TCFT or a topological field theory. Okay, so that's one of the theorems, but I haven't really quite finished my story. I have to tell you why the cochains on a manifold has one of these. I have to tell you why the cochains on a Poincaré duality space has one of these. And I also have to give you a mechanism for picking out which one of these I mean. In the case of the two-sphere, I pointed out that there were two ways of factoring this through Hochschild homology. To factor it through cyclic homology, there's in fact an uncountable number of ways of doing it. So there has to be some other structure that that lets us pick out the one in topology. Before I get to that, so I was going to say a little bit more about the proof and the formulation here. I'm not going to have time, but I do want to mention that one of the key points is that that the endomorphism operad of one of these, of something with this kind of a pairing, has the structure of a modular operad in the sense of Getzler-Kapranov, and the A infinity structure. So that's a map from the A infinity operad to the endomorphism operad, that refines to a map of cyclic operads. And that's sort of a infinity kind of reading of the theorem of Getzler and Kapranov, that the endomorphism, that's basically a theorem of Getzler-Kapranov, and maybe I'll just, relating cyclic traces and cyclic A infinity structures. So this is that. Yeah, I just wanted to point out this relies sort of on this work of Ezra's. Okay, so the last thing I need to tell you is how do you make the cochains on a manifold an A infinity Frobenius algebra in our case. How do we do that? Well, again, we have to go back to the geometry or the topology to remember where, how this trace map appeared. So let's see. We were trying to understand something about the loop space on a manifold, and the manifold itself sits inside there as the fixed points of the circle action. So that gives me a map from the cochains on the manifold to the cochains on the free loop space, back to the cochains on the manifold, and then out of this, I can define a trace map. And now let's see, there's also a map down to the original manifold by evaluating at some point, and that gives me a map from the cochains on M back in. And this factors the Poincaré, the trace map through the cochains on the loop space, which is the Hochschild chains of the cochains on M. So this is the one. So in the situation that Luc Medici studied, where I was just looking at the Tolle-Van-Vilkovisky structure, this is the map that corresponds to the Chaz-Sullivan BV structure. It's the one that factors back through the fixed points of the circle action and then just uses the original trace map on the manifold. Now, since this is the fixed points of the circle action, on cochains, this map here factors through the homotopy quotient by the circle action, which is the cyclic homology, or the cyclic chains. I was kind of trying to avoid writing this symbol, but there it is. So this is the cyclic chains on the cochain algebra of M. And this factors literally because this is going in by the fixed points. Okay, well, I could do this with any space now that had Poincaré duality. All I need this map. I have that map for any space. And then I have, all I need is that the adjoint of this pairing be an equivalence, and that holds for any Poincaré duality space. So this is how, so the cochains on any Poincaré duality space is an A-infinity Frobenius algebra by this structure. So let me just finish with one last point, because there's another body of work I need to mention, and that is, I could have picked this one out entirely in the world of algebra. So the cochains on a space, on any finite dimensional space, on any space, this is not just an A-infinity algebra, it's an E-infinity algebra. And on any E-infinity algebra, so if A is an E-infinity algebra, there's a canonical map from the Hochschild, from the cyclic chains on A back to A. And it corresponds, if you think of E-infinity algebra as just sort of more or less spaces, and this is more or less has to do with the loop space, it corresponds to the map, the inclusion of a space into the fixed points of the circle action. So really, another way of thinking about this is that that there's sort of, instead of A, it's true, we have this kind of interesting definition of a A-infinity Frobenius algebra that involves all this structure, but for an E-infinity algebra, there's a kind of canonical way way of taking any trace map and extending it to this A-infinity kind. So this suggests, I don't want to commit to this because I don't, but it suggests that maybe the right notion of E-infinity Frobenius is probably just an E-infinity algebra plus a trace, which such that with the property that this map is homotopy non-degenerate. Okay. Now, I mention this because in the telling, I didn't quite find a way of fitting it in while I was telling it, but there's a very nice paper of Hamilton and Lazarev where they work over Q, and they study E-infinity Frobenius algebras and show that the deformation theory of a rigid trace over Q, of a rigid kind of trace, the same thing as the sort of deformation up to theory up to homotopy, and they get something that will feed into Costello's machine. So Hamilton and Lazarev sort of have this picture like this over Q already in a very nice paper, and our contribution is to sort of find something that works over any ring and find what I think is really what is the right condition for A infinity Frobenius. Okay, oh, I'll stop here. No wine? Well, then I have a few other things to say. Yeah, anyway.
What is the moduli of these different structures on the homology of the loop? So you mentioned that the case of S2 is two.
For BV structures? I haven't checked. There's something I haven't checked, but certainly given any map, any derived map from, is it still on the board? Yeah. Given any, so if I take Arham of this and the homotopy class of the maps from here into here, I will get an isomorphism and I'll get a delta and a multiplication. And I haven't checked that the delta, I don't know if it's an extra condition. I don't know, it might be that any one of those gives me a BV structure. I haven't checked to know, but I think the moduli space is sort of are these derived maps. If you chase this through, what you find is that let's see, this is an element. This is a homomorphism from here to here. So roughly speaking, it's an element in the dual. It's an element in the dual of this, or it's an element in this. And that element corresponds to the thing that's playing the role of the unit here. So somehow the moduli space is just the space of candidates for the unit in the multiplication. But beyond that, I don't really know.
Does this correspond to a way maybe you can simplify your infinity for unit algebra to 1 to get 7 infinity?
I don't think you can strictify R's. It's probably, Kevin's machine will. I mean, if you just with sort of simple modifications, Kevin's machine will receive this kind of an input. You don't need to strictify it. He's done all the work. Ezra, yeah.
Two quick questions. Do you think that the periodic
cycles? Gosh, I don't know. I haven't sort of really internalized the real role of cyclic homology beyond what you identified with Misha and the way it and that. So,
do you think it's possible that even an E2 or the algebra would
already allow? That's probably known, and I think I would rather refer to my junior co-author. Where is he? Jacob, is he around? Do you know if E2 would... Do you get a map from the cyclic homology back to the algebra if it's... He has to think about it? I think that's a very difficult and possibly unsolved problem. Any other questions? Wait, I'm sorry. Yeah?
So, if I have a module over a Frobenius algebra, can I picture the map from A tensor M to M? Something like a pair of checks.
Wow, I never thought about that. I mean, you want to think of a pair consisting of an A infinity Frobenius algebra and a module as also forming one of these. I guess I don't know. I mean, I guess I would try to make a square zero extension and make a deformation of the algebra. But Ezra, do you know? Do people? Yeah, I'm going to talk a little about what goes on the corners tomorrow, but yeah, but that's a, yeah, but it's really, you're right, that what goes on the points is the category of modules. So if you want to Right. If you want to kind of put boundary conditions on, you pick modules in those categories. I might try to say a little more about that in my next lecture. But thank you. Yeah, you're right. The modules fit in on the as boundary conditions.
That was a book, Deep Brain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, one more question.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I just wanted to ask. Do you know that Weintraub's work was for an atheistic thought that didn't include the sphere? Does that play any role?
You know, that was only because he didn't know about the Kahn model for the Kahn loop group model. I mean, he just did that because he wanted to take a cell decomposition of the manifold, pull it back to the universal cover, and see that the chains on the loop space was Gorenstein. I mean, that would be that's sort of the way to say it. But that's really true for any manifold. He just didn't have the technology. I think they teach that in the senior year of high school over there. But I don't know.